Thank you for joining with us for another episode of Morning Briefings here on the Pipeline Intercession for the President and on our podcast. If you have any dreams that you have about the Office of the President, please send them to pip@christiancenterstreetport.com. We're so thankful that you all have joined in with us on this prayer journey, and we look forward to standing with you not only today, but in the days ahead. So with that, we'll go ahead and join today's broadcast as we talk about the news and stand on the wall for this nation and the Office of the President. Good morning, everyone. Zach R. Skadden coming to you live from North Carolina. And today is another beautiful day to be here, to stand on the wall, despite what's going on in the world. The Lord can give us the strength we need to survive this season and thrive even now and in the season ahead. And today is a very interesting day as we're seeing the fallout of the leak of coming from SCOTUS and Samuel Alito's rough draft of his opinion. And I'll get to that here in a second. But I think as we look at the total spectrum of what's going on, and as we continue our study through looking at the early evening watch from 6 to 9 of how to prepare ourselves and reorder our day to get in that alignment of the Lord, we see in Acts 28 a spiritual understanding foundation of what I titled today's episode of New Dimension of Power and Strength. And Paul is one of the best examples of that. And really, the first part of the story in Acts 28 is a launching into, okay, this is what happened, but Paul launches into in that new power and strength and dimension in the Lord, not in and of himself. And when we look at, and today's verse of the day is the entire chapter of Acts 28, because it shows a great example of being removed from the past seasons and sins, and when accusations are brought against you, and even when life may seem hard, and where we're unable to do things in the natural, only the Lord can provide a way for us to thrive in certain seasons. And when the enemy tries to hamper us, to bog us down, to get us locked up spiritually and naturally, the Lord can still use those situations to have us thrive. And as we see here in the first portion, the New American Standard titles it Safe at Malta. And this is a story of Paul going to the island of Malta, and then the natives there were kind, giving them fire. And then in verse 3, but when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire, a viper came out because of the heat and fastened itself on his hand. And when the natives saw, this is interesting, when the natives saw the creature hanging from his hand, they began saying to one another, undoubtedly this man is a murderer. And though he has been saved from the sea, justice has not allowed him to live. And while the enemy, okay, would want to try to take him out via the sea, via the viper, and even there is some truth to Paul being somewhat of a murderer of how he persecuted the church and killed Christians who were spreading the gospel, because of the power of the blood of Jesus, he is saved from that. But then as the story goes on, they were expecting certain things to happen, but they didn't happen, because he was in that place, in that timing, in the place of the Lord. And obviously, you know, he gave wisdom to the captain of the ship to not go out to sea at that time, but they did anyways, etc. And so as we see this new dimension of Paul, even in the accusations of the church the Jews trying to bring against him, appealing to Rome, appealing to the authority where you have authority, and then he goes on to then bring healing to one of the natives' fathers, Publius, who was lying in bed afflicted with recurrent fever and dysentery. And Paul went to see him, and after he had prayed, he laid his hands on him and healed him. And this had happened. The rest of the people on the island who had diseases were coming to him and getting cured. So when we see Paul in this position of, okay, he has all these accusations against him, but now he brings spiritual signs and wonders and the gospel, kingdom gospel message. And then he goes on after that, leaving from Malta to Syracuse. And then it ends up getting to Rome. And then in Rome, he's there able to spread and share the gospel. So even when the enemy, you know, means something for evil, God can turn that for good. And in this season, as we're entering into this new dimension, in this new season, we want to ask the Lord for the new dimension of power and strength, obviously in him and in his blood and in his word, and the foundations of the word of God, so that we can be that example, be that light, be the vessels, the ambassadors for the kingdom of heaven, and spreading the gospel kingdom message to those wherever we're at, whether it be just your neighborhood, whether it be just to your family, work, however it may play out, is we want to be diligent and open to what the Lord has for us in this season, so we can reach the destiny of this nation, which is spread the gospel of the kingdom to the nations. All right. With that, I want to highlight some things today that are interesting. There's really no focus from the American news media on the Russia-Ukraine war right now, because the big story is the potential overturn of Roe v. Wade. While that is important, is we still want to pray for the war still goes on for Russia and Ukraine, and for the innocent people in Ukraine whose lives are now turned upside down. But there is news out of China that there is a massive fleet of China from the Chinese Navy that is barreling towards Japan and South China Sea, which is very alarming, most likely headed toward what is considered the Taiwan Strait. And so seeing this is where we want to continue to pray for our administration currently, not losing focus on what the current news media is trying to tell us, focus being distracted. And while, yes, this is an important issue, is we can kind of get isolated and only focus on this one issue, and there's still other things going on. So we want to pray for that. What does this mean? What is the response from the American Navy? What is the response from administrators? Does this potentially lead towards a growing world war? If you know, Russia tries to start something, does China then get involved? How does it look? What happens? Who gets involved? Where? And so this is really spreading thin, this administration. And so we want to pray for them to listen to those who have the fear and wisdom of the Lord in this season, because it's time for them, those people who are in this administration, to stand up and speak godly wisdom to the leaders that are over them, to the president himself, because there are those who are taking advantage of Biden and his states of dementia. So we want to pray for this administration as well on this issue. And then another story that I think we really need to pay attention to, and more so for understanding what is really going on with this administration, is Project Veritas has released a report from sources inside the federal government that reveals suspected terrorists and people who are on Tier 1 terrorist watch lists who are in the United States, known and walking freely with work visas and other visas from Afghanistan. And so when we sit here and say, you know, there's the 42 terrorists who they know of who've crossed the border, and they don't know where they are, or at least aren't saying where they are, Then you, on this other side of it, in another story, is you have people who are considered armed and dangerous, who have work visas, who are walking across the border, walking in the state. What does that mean? What happens? We're getting closer to, you know, something popping off, and it is something to be very mindful of, because if we understand who these type of people are, what morals, what standards they live by, knowing that they were on terrorist watch lists, they were literally flown in to the United States via the Afghanistan debacle from this administration. So something to be very aware of. Pray for those who are in law enforcement to be aware of this. I mean, they know their whereabouts, some in California, some throughout other portions of the country. And Project Veritas has detailed information from sources within inside the federal government about what is going on here and who these people are, where they're going, where they've been. This is very, very alarming from this administration to see the decisions that they've made bring forth this type of fruit. And so we want to be very aware of the times and seasons that we were in and understand what we're dealing with now here because of the decisions that were made. Okay, so last night was we talked about primaries are going to start. Yesterday was Ohio and Indiana, and I'm going to pull up some of these results from Real Clear Politics. And for those who listen via podcast, I will put the links in the show notes below. But the primary, and I'm going to start with Indiana. Indiana is really straightforward. A lot of the races were uncontested. And again, these are Republican and Democratic primaries. So you're starting to see who the midterms will be against. And so Indiana's pretty much straightforward. The senator running on the Republican ticket will be Todd Young. The senator running on the Democratic ticket will be Thomas McDermott. And then you go to the House, and then there are local. This is just federal elections. But I want to really, really point out the data on the Ohio races. As we saw last night, J.D. Vance, the Trump backed candidate for senator, Republican Senate seat in Ohio, ended up winning even by an okay margin. It's almost a 10-point margin within on the Republican side. But if we look at that compared to the Democratic candidate, so J.D. Vance only got 340,991 votes, garnering 32.2% of the total Republican vote. And that's with what is being reported of 97.2% of votes counted. So he clearly won the Republican primary. Now we look at the Democratic side. The leading candidate, Tim Ryan, got 355,764 votes of 69.7% of the Democratic primary votes. If this were to go to, based on those votes, if this were to go to the midterm, Tim Ryan wins. Now, let's look at the following candidates under, because this is what this will be about. And this is the challenge, not just in Ohio, in a lot of highly contested in Georgia. This will be the problem in Georgia. This will be a problem in some governor seats and challengers in other states, Senate and House seats, where there are multiple candidates. Because this is the issue when you have multiple candidates. I'm going to point it out very clearly. Is when we look at the votes here. Okay, J.D. Vance got 341,000 votes. Okay. The next candidate, Josh Mandel in Ohio, got 253,000 votes. The candidate under him got 247,000. And then you go on Mike Gibson, 123, maybe 124 if you round up, severely round up. And then the final low candidate is 62,000. Now, if you look at the Democratic side, they have the leader, leading candidate Tim Ryan, 355,000. Let's say 356,000. The second place candidate got 90,000 and then 64,000. What is the differences of the party are that the of the three candidates on the Democratic side, the two runners up are going to endorse Tim Ryan, and majority of the time, 95% of the time, those 154,000 votes are going to vote for Tim Ryan. The challenge is going to be for every state out there in the Republican Party. If you talk about this quote-unquote red wave, this is why I said hold your horses on that, because it's going to determine how people vote. Of are these 600, almost 700,000 votes going to vote for J.D. Vance? Will Josh Mandel, Matt Dolan, Mike Gibson, James Timken, are they going to endorse J.D. Vance after attacking him for months, after campaigning against him for months? And this is going to go for every other state. Are the candidates who are lower going to stand behind one candidate? Because if you're talking about a red wave, you're going to be challenged with how the parties end up supporting each other. And so if they get behind them, it's a clear front runner. J.D. Vance wins. You take the second, third, fourth, fifth candidates, and that there's more. If they all throw their support behind J.D. Vance and all the voters vote for J.D. Vance, hopefully he has biblical moral values. I have looked nothing into him. I just know Trump endorsed him, and that's it. Because I'm studying North Carolina, because that's where I live. This goes for other races. This is going to go for the race of the governor in Ohio. The same could be said. Because if you look at the governor's race, okay, Mike DeWine won the primary with 514,000 votes. The Democratic candidate, Nan Whaley, got 326,000, and then the runner-up, John Cranley, got 175,000. If you add those 175,000 to that 326, you're right there at about 500,000, and then you're splitting hairs on if you get more Democrats out to vote in the midterm, and then especially with this abortion issue now being the hot primary campaign point, and then you can split some of these, again, another 500,000 votes. It's not as clear cut as people say. And it only happens if people don't vote together. And this is a problem with the Republican Party, is they don't always vote behind each other. And the Democrats do. So I lay this picture out there to say, okay, you're hearing this red wave. You're hearing all this stuff. Now with abortion becoming pro-life becoming a hot topic on the campaign trail, where do things lie? Where are people going to vote? It seems if you listen to certain people, conservative pundits, oh yeah, we got it, no problem. That's not the case. Depends upon it. Do people get out and vote, number one, and then who counts the votes? Those are the two things that it's going to come down to in the midterms. Okay, I'm going to move on. A shocking, shocking story out of Vice News. If you know anything about Vice News, they are not freedom-loving people. They are for a lot of totalitarian lockdowns and things of that nature. But they have actually done a great, great job of reporting where they asked for a freedom of information request towards the CDC and an organization called, I want to make sure I get this right. I had it up here for a second. An organization called SafeGraph, what they have come to find is that the CDC purchased the ability to track millions of phones to see if Americans followed COVID lockdowns. Seeing if you went to your neighbors, did you actually stay in your home, where you went in your community, did you go to church, did you go to the gym? You get the idea. They're tracking where you went based upon movements from your cell phone that you carry in your pocket to communicate and literally do everything with, most people do nowadays. We talked about this before, about how the government was doing this. This was under Trump. Mind you that. So even with everything Trump was doing, this was still going on. I think this just shows how deep the swamp really is. The then CDC director in front of congressional hearings was asking for the ability to do this and more. And this is what's very, this is very alarming and something we really, really want to pay attention to. And then you're talking about the Minister of Truth Disinformation Board coming along. This is the type of stuff they're going to do. And so we're seeing this play out. And I point this story out because this next story out because Biden has talked about student loans. And now he's talking about not just $50,000, but canceling all student loans for anybody who makes under $125,000. And here's the issue with that is it's not clear cut who gets it. Okay, $125,000. If, let's say, potentially, I'm not saying this is what they're doing, but this could be potentially what they're going to do. Of if you got the vaccine, of if you don't speak out against the government, of if you do what we tell you to do, that type of ideology to win votes. And this is obviously a point for this administration to try to garner votes for the Democrats coming up in this election. And the reason the 125,000 came up is because Paskey said that that was a number that then candidate Biden referenced on the campaign trail. So that's what they want to stick with to be truthful to what their statements were in the past. So this is something we want to pay attention to, pray for wisdom on, for our leaders. And really, really another thing to pray for is we want to intercede for the voters in the coming midterms and even primaries to vote based upon the wisdom and upon biblical moral values at the end of the day. That's where this all leads to, because everything that you're seeing just being pummeled in the news, student loans, the Supreme Court rulings, the economy, everything, it's all going to be geared towards the midterms and potentially, you know, another summer of love happening with peaceful protests and stuff like that. Something we really want to be understanding of now and in the season ahead. And then potentially, and Mitt Romney points this out. He says, if you're going to give for student loans, what's to say you don't forgive auto loans, credit card loans, mortgages, and ultimately any other type of debt that's out there? And that's economically, it's basically just a tax equation. You're just shifting from one person to another, whereas the individual doesn't have to pay for it, but the entire country. It would be a disastrous move economically right now in a season where we're at $30 trillion in national debt and counting. So we want to pray for our leaders on that issue. And then kind of, I want to sum up a lot of things that are happening yesterday around the SCOTUS draft that came out. There are stories about the protesters in front of the Supreme Court. A lot of it is confusion and a lot of it is outrage and emotion. We posted yesterday in our Facebook group on Pipeline that, you know, Elizabeth Warren was seen there like getting really angry and upset and shaking and just really distraught. And look, she's not faking it. She truly believes and is acting that way. I've seen this type of stuff before. I've been to protest in Austin a couple years back where similar type cases came up, an issue came up, and these people, they're outrageous. You can't have a conversation with them. I get, okay, you have a different view. That's fine. Let's have a conversation. Let's create some dialogue, and they don't want to do this. It's my way or the highway type stuff. And so there are stories out there that are just ridiculous. I mean, their argument and their chanting. And we'll talk about this on Friday at our noon prayer about what this means, what to do, how to pray, what to do in the states where if this were to go this way, how how we cover ourselves in prayer. So something to pay attention to there, to look at. We see the outrage. So we're seeing that. Now, the rumors of a potential investigation into the leaker are confirmed, where Robert said he's going to get the marshal for the Supreme Court to investigate how this came out, who was the person responsible for it. And then there is the question of, some politicians are saying the person, this is a crime, but nobody's saying what crime. I'm all for holding somebody accountable, but what crime is there? Bill Barr talks about how he's like, you could look at this, but at the end of the day, what is the crime? There might be a crime. You can't make up a crime just because somebody does something. Because again, we talked about yesterday, this happened in the original case in 1973. Then the person lost their job, but what crime is committed? I'm not saying there wasn't one, but what crime was committed? And it is a backlash on the integrity and really the decision-making process of the Supreme Court to not have those informations out there, as it is normal for drafts to be created and passed around to make sure the actual ruling is put out to the public and interpreted correctly. Now, with that being said, President Biden has come out and said that the right to an abortion is a fundamental right. He even goes on to say that Roe has been the law of the land for almost 50 years, and basic fairness and the stability of our law demand that it not be overturned. That's a direct quote from President Biden himself. Basic fairness and the stability of our law demand that it not be overturned. Then he goes around and in that same speech talks about how the Democrats need to elect more pro-choice senators and a pro-choice majority in the House this fall to pass federal legislation that would ensure the right to an abortion. Meaning, I supposedly have a law on the books because Roe v. Wade passed, but now we want to pass a law. And this is where things start to get dicey for this whole issue of, on the campaign trail, you're going to start seeing it where they're pushing for this. This will be the hot topic. The economy, especially for Democrats, will not be the hot topic. Where people stand on this issue will start being the most important issue. And this could split some of those moderate, some of those Democrats who don't stand for pro-life, who would vote for freedom, biblical moral value type candidates, even though they wouldn't necessarily 100% believe them and stand for those values. They would stand for radical ideologies not being taught in schools, as we saw in Virginia. So now the Democrats understood they had to do something. Something had to change. The narrative, the focus had to change. Can't be Ukraine, can't be Afghanistan, can't be the economy. All issues they're losing on. And that's why I say it's important to pray for people to, again, vote based on biblical moral values. Vote based upon how the Lord is leading them in your state. Their report from Bloomberg, The Hill, and other organizations talking about how this now becomes the issue. No other issue matters for candidates on the campaign trail. This is the sole issue. And yes, this does need to be a major, major issue, but there are other issues as well. And if continue to pray, continue to stand for those justices, because their families are now at risk. Their families are in the crosshairs. And if we remember what they did to Justice Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Gorsuch wasn't as bad. Kavanaugh was probably some of the worst, most forefront, and it affected Kavanaugh. That's why we want to continue to pray for him. Lou Engle put out a prayer point about, you know, binding the decision that is already made from the five justices. And it looks like Roberts is leaning with liberals, which would not be a surprise, and not standing for life. It's very concerning for him who said he was a certain way, but he's obviously not. So we want to continue to intercede for this Golden Court case, for life, for protection for the justices, their families, and for them to have peace in the storm. Specifically, hey, Roberts is still up in the air, it sounds like. And so we want to continue to pray for him, to have the wisdom. And look, if he's siding from, doesn't want to be the bearer of bad news, let Alito be that. Let Amy Coney Barrett, let Gorsuch, let them be the front of this. He can just, okay, cool. I'm gonna rule with the majority. That's usually what he does. Will he do it here? We'll see. But there are intellectual reasons for voting either way for him. I'm not saying that we agree with him, but for him there are. But we ultimately want to have the fear of the God come on him and pray that he votes for life on this case and sides for the issue of life. And the last thing of Nikki Haley's Stand for America PAC, it does a good job of, again, we've shown a map of this before, but I think this kind of in a list form shows the difference of where each nation stands, of countries that allow elective abortions up to birth. Three nations: the United States, China, and North Korea. And then countries that don't allow elective abortions up to birth. And the list is very lengthy, as more nations stand for life than America, at least allowing the opportunity for life to survive earlier than America does. And the last thing I want to close on is this map is very interesting, and this could change in the days ahead, and something we want to pray for, even for those who are not in states where laws are already on the books that will be triggered. Is New York Post put out this map, and there are other organizations who put out a map similar. I just like this one better because it was clear, and there's an article that goes with it explaining the differences and the arguments and everything that I've summed up here. But you see here the 13 states that in dark red, where abortion, once Roe is struck down, will automatically abortion will be banned in different levels. Oklahoma just passed a law, I think at the point of birth, even conception or heartbeat, I can't remember exactly what it was. I read an article this morning about it, that they just, it went into place already, triggering that. And then now you have other states that will most likely ban or restrict abortions. And so, but that means that doesn't, it's not 100% certain. That's still up in the air. And then you have the blue states, where abortions will be legal. And so these are for those believers in these states, in Virginia, and we have some in New York, obviously California, areas to pray. And so we lay this out to say this will now be, and again, this goes back to Chris Reed's word of, we'll basically see a dividing of the nations, dividing of the states. And so this is very good to understand the ground and the state and the place that we're in, knowing where to battle. And even just because you're in a state that has these laws that are triggered, doesn't mean that they're not going to try to overturn them. Look at Colorado. Colorado used to be hard red. Now look at them. Pro-abortion, pro-totalitarianism, even from Republican people in the state of Colorado. So the positive is that, yes, there are states who want life. More do want to stand for a life than don't. And so we want to continue to pray for this issue, pray for the office of the president to have wisdom when they're ruling in this season, as best as we can. And trying to cover him, and then repenting, as we are going to need to start doing in the days ahead, for statements being made by the president, statements being made by politicians, and decisions being made by leaders nationally and locally. So with that, I'll close. Don't forget, today is our appeal to heaven, noon prayer, and then tonight we'll have our another Wednesday night healing and deliverance service. And then we will close out the week on Friday, kind of covering this topic of the spiritual battle and how to pray there as well. So blessings, and I will see you guys tomorrow. Have a great day.